we get it underway by saying hello to our friend, writer Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
How's it going, buddy?
Doing very well today. Thank you very much. St. Patrick's Day tomorrow that, I don't know, some people celebrate that in unique ways. I've got a whole lot of Irish in me. I don't know. I don't go too crazy, but it all ties into a piece that will appear in tomorrow's New York Daily News about, well, more adventures for you in the world of attempted romance. Did you actually have a woman on one of these dating websites say to you, quote, "Oscar Wilde was a smart man with the job of creating clever sayings"?
I actually made what she said sound more intelligent, but yes, I
oh
did.
My. Oh,
and
my.
I should preface this by saying I am banned from most dating sites, as it were.
Really?
Because, yes, what happens is I will give someone an honest answer as to why I might not be interested, which doesn't take some sort of like nasty tone or anything like that. But sometimes people will have pressed me in the past and like, why? They'll like really badger me and why I might not want to go out with them. And so eventually I'll say, I'm looking for someone with better language skills or something like that. But it's true. But it's like someone's really goading you into something. And I'll just say it. And I have a rule that I won't say anything to anyone that I am not comfortable with it being on the front page of Twitter. That's my rule. Even like with the emails that I send to everybody that you see, were someone to pull a Judas and betray me, I write everything thinking, okay, I'm okay with that. And maybe could even turn it into an advantage. So what then happens is they complain to the administrators, and because of patriarchy and all these things, and even though I'm supposed to have all of the privilege and I live in the poverty with the discrimination, all that, you actually get banned. So you've done nothing, and then away you go. And it's like kind of this other side of society that no one talks about. So yes, she did say that. And one could even argue, Mr. Kimball, that she woman-splained to me, didn't she, about Oscar Wilde?
Yes, yes, I believe she did. And I guess I've missed out in that I don't quite think of Oscar Wilde as the basis for St. Patrick's Day memes, but apparently that's what much of the world has been doing.
It's not necessarily St. Patrick's Day related, but when you look at these profiles, you will see the same things. You'll see someone say that they are laid back and easygoing and life's too short and the two will not be the right two. So it's not like too short that you have to get that correct. And it's really just the same. I mean, honestly, it's probably like two dozen words and you will see quotes flown in. And this quote is the most common one, this Oscar Wilde quote of "be yourself because everyone else is already taken." So you're getting this from so many people, countless people who are proving the antithesis of what they're trying to assert and behaving in this robotic, sheep-esque way. And what's telling, too, about someone saying this to me, because I remarked about Oscar Wilde, and as you know, you could probably surmise the sea dog knows a little something about Oscar Wilde, as in more than anybody out there, baby. And so I played along, and I said, oh, it's nice to see Oscar Wilde, thinking, although not really, that we're going to have a conversation about Oscar Wilde. And that's when she gave me the definition of what he did, that his job was to sit around and come up with quips. But it's telling because this is a person who could never entertain the notion that someone else might know something that they don't and have a more expansive knowledge. And I think that's kind of the big takeaway for me here, because you get this kind of gruesome trickle-down psychological economics of paying the price of someone else's ignorance and short-sightedness and ultimately their narcissism.
Well, you use this doomed encounter to jump off from there and talk about what you call Dorian Graying. Can you explain that?
Sure. So a lot of people will know of, at least by title, Oscar Wilde's novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray. And film fans can point to any of a number of examples throughout Hollywood history, and it's treated sometimes as a text for a horror film. where Dorian Gray is going to live it up. And he's not going to age as he lives it up in this kind of lascivious, just dissolute lifestyle. But his portrait is going to show the wear and tear of what he's actually doing in this nullity that is his life. And I think that's just the perfect metaphor. It will be for a long time, timeless. But it's the perfect metaphor, too, for our age, where we spend so much time cultivating literally the image, because that's what a portrait is, right? It's an image of who we are. It's not actually who we are. And it's also a portraiture is tucked away, in this case, in a house. It's private. It's not for public viewing. In the same way that we kind of tuck away our actual self and we have this stage manner that we utilize in its stead. And so what I'm saying in this particular piece is you're not doing the thing where you're quaffing the green beer this year and you're not having the revelry. And frankly, if you would be having that otherwise, time to grow up, people. And maybe it's a more meditative sort of St. Patrick's Day, and actually look at who Oscar Wilde was. And he was an individualist. He was someone who was persecuted because of his homosexuality. One time, there's another woman, she had a different, this is good, and I think I can say this, I think it's clean enough. She was had a different Oscar Wilde quote, and I said something to her, I'm like, oh, wow, you used another Oscar Wilde quote, not the normal one. And she said, yeah, he was this guy, she gives me the same thing. He was this guy whose job it was to think up clever sayings. And I said, also, he was infamous because when he would leave hotels, the chambermaid would have to take out his excrement-stained sheets from all of his sodomy. And she's like, oh, no, that's so wrong, patriarchy. It's like, but it's true. It was. Well, quite the scandal.
And when you talk about the Dorian Gray, I mean, I saw a real-life example today, a literal example of it. I was looking on social media at a friend's picture, and I thought, what's something's not right here. What? Oh, they're using some bizarre filter. I mean, look, it's one thing to look for the photo that puts you in the best light to pop up there as your profile picture, but what bizarre level of vanity have we reached when people in their 40s and 50s and beyond use filters that make them look like Sybil Shepherd in Moonlighting?
I saw this woman yesterday on that same sort of like literal idea of the image, and she had five or six photos of herself, and they were numinous. Like, they were actually, like, glowing. Like,
yeah.
They were the, like, the oracle. Like, like that was the filter of, like, Citron. It's like, I am glowing gold. Like, this light was sort of, you ever see that film? It's not very good, but it was kind of like this made-for-TV film about Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris.
Oh, yeah, it did. One. Yes.
And if you notice how Mickey Mantle is lit in that film,
right.
It's like he's like the glowing god.
He's the golden boy.
She had like this glowing goddess thing going, and it creeped me out. And I just was thinking, like, we are not meant to love with your numinosity. And I was ready. I mean, you know my line. That's sort of like, let's get it out there. This is my catchphrase. Great, comma. Good luck, period. It is the same as just like the Colin Fleming kiss of death. Oof. If you get that from me, I cannot overstate how much I despise every single thing I feel that you stand for. And yet I can just say it because, like, what can you say? Like, oh, that's he's too terse with me. But it's like, no, you can't. It's really quite polite.
Does anyone respond with something like, so does this, like, mean we're not going to get together?
Oh, yes, you can get a variety of responses, because I have learned there is nothing, no matter how innocuous, seemingly benign, or prosaic you say to someone, that they will not turn around into an attack upon you. And when you block them, they can do a search to find me and confront me at my site and to say, I also know these people. They're real writers. They're brave women who would hate someone like you. And it's like, I've been alone for like 5 years. Like, this is really not kind of like, I'm not out there doing my thing. And I get the opportunities of like these sort of objectifying notes from women all the time. I got one yesterday. It was good. It's from 28-year-olds. Like, you're so good looking. Are you really 45? I'm like, what? that's kind of like, what does that mean? Like, that's not old. But still, it was like, it was good. It's like, you can say that to someone else who's married, and they're like, yeah, that's pretty great, man. Like, Chad would appreciate something like that. But I also get sometimes, because they have to have the last word, often, that they will say, you too. Like, wait, it's necessary. Like, we're done here. But then I let them have the point, because really, I'm just trying to also, at the same time, avoid any kind of scandal.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Well, listen, blocking you is one thing. At least they're not stealing your work like some people out there. Colin, you've been hit by plagiarism, and the response of this guy was, what do you want? I'm 60.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. So, like, plagiarism is a really bad thing. Like, I don't know how people who plagiarize are able to live with themselves, but knowing, for instance, what you do, maybe some of the listeners know about my life right now. Plagiarism for me, and speaks to how bad things are and how evil my business is. Plagiarism is like actually really way down the list for me of things that people do to me that's just heinous and abusive. I don't even kind of mind it that much. Like idea theft, which happens all the time. The Pulitzer Prize winning editor will steal my idea. I will, because I have the technology, literally watch him steal my idea. I'll see the IP address. I'll know he's taking it. I know who he's sending it to so they can steal it. And even that doesn't compare to the discrimination that I deal with. Because if you're going to steal my ideas, maybe don't be the ultimate bigot and just not let me into the magazine and blackball me, because I can do what these people can't do. So I came back from a walk the other day, and it was a short walk. It's like Saturday or Sunday, sometime over the weekend. And there's this NHL Facebook group that, I look at Facebook. I don't partake of Facebook, but I'll see like your page or Bruce's page and some of these other like baseball card groups and things like that. And someone has posted something about Bobby Orr in the Canada Cup in 1976. And so I'm reading this post and I'm like, I had a really bad, it's a bad time right now. It's an even worse time than usual, as readers of the blog would perhaps know. And so I'm at a low point and I'm reading this and I'm hardened because it's so well written. It's the best written thing I've seen in years. And I'm thinking like, wow, this is just something about Bobby Orr, and it's just some guy's post. There are other people out there who can command language well. And then I hit this metaphor, and I'm getting increasingly incredulous as I go. I hit this metaphor where the author says that hockey players tend to break down into two categories. There are hands players and there are legs players. And Bobby Orr was the rare legs player who transitioned after he left Boston, which is where he was at this point in his career, near the end, to a hands player. And he was able to dominate that way. And then right when I see that metaphor, I think, oh, my God, you wrote this, dude. This is you. And I check it. And it's like, you know how when I was on Facebook, it's part of the reason I'm not on it, I could go on NPR. I could be in the New York Times. I could have featured in The Atlantic, Fiction, and Harper's. And you would see how, like, you and like one other person would hit the like button. You could see the pariah I was, and I didn't need that. So this guy, I never had more than like 5 likes for anything. So this guy, stealing from me, he's got like 130 likes in like 5 minutes. And everyone's like, wow, this is the best written post we've ever had in here. And so I jump in there, I'm like, yeah, because I wrote it, bitches. So like a few hours go by, and this guy who I confronted about this, and I didn't like say anything nasty to him. I just said what was true. He starts going off on me. And then he has this defense. He goes, well, I put a quote at the beginning, so I added my own thing. And like, that's not how this works. Just not a little bit how this works. And then he has his second defense is, what do you expect from me? I'm 60. Now it's like, what on earth, right, does that have to do? You could live, well, he wasn't morbidly obese, so he won't, but you could live for another 40 years. And so it's like, you're like 62, right?
Yeah, but I'm going to use that line now as an excuse for anything.
Well, think of like Dylan. He's out there like for 2.5 hours and he's like 80. He's 60. Like what is like, you're 15 years older than Tom Brady practically. Like who cares? And so then he decides to do me a solid. After carping, he says to me, fine, if it means that much to you, I'll credit you. It's like I wrote it, dude. So I made the mistake of looking at some of this guy's other posts. And his posts are all about social justice and Black Lives Matter. And I'm thinking, genius lives matter, too. I mean, can we do that one? And also that he really hates narcissism and megalomania. And that was the word he used like 15 times. And it was like this satire on how just self-awareness just does not exist anymore. And it just was like this surreal thing where I thought I had met a kindred soul who was commanding the English language at a level where I said, I could get along with them. And then I thought, you do get along with them. You have no one else. You have no friends. You're unloved. But hey, you can write well. So, not good.
Are you living your life to the fullest, though, Colin? That's what I'd like to know.
I'd like to know, and I figured you would be a good person to ask about this. Everyone says this. Many people say this. Do you think that we are so sufficiently deluded right now that the people who say that honestly believe that, or even believe it a little bit?
No, I think it's one of those things that I would put in this category, that if you have to say it about yourself rather than someone else saying it about you, it's probably not true, and you probably know that.
What do you mean about the part someone saying it about you, like in they're giving you counsel, they're saying like...
Oh, if someone said, my gosh, you are really living your life to the fullest. I'm impressed with what you do.
I thought you meant almost like a sit-down where someone said to you, look, I have to say this to you. I feel like you're kind of not maxing out on everything that you can be. And we've talked about the example before of Lou Reed. It's always stuck with me. And it was like maybe 10 years before he died, and he was giving some interview, and he talked about he didn't want to die. And he didn't live like that old. So like, he said this whenever he was like in his 50s or 60s or something. He said, it's strange to me that you die without having read all of Shakespeare. And I think someone like that is actually thinking in the terms of living life to the fullest. Because when your life is like three basic things every day, like even Netflix watchers, and I'm just glad I don't have, we've talked about this, I don't have the service anymore. And you're sitting there and the only thing you consume, because I think that's really the verb you'd use for Netflix. You wouldn't screen something on Netflix. You consume it like it's caloric. If you're just watching Netflix, and that's the only like media you consume in terms of film or television, how could you honestly be so obtuse? You'd be like a rodent to think that you're living life to the fullest. I saw this thing on Facebook again earlier today. That was yesterday. And people were discussing Picasso's Cubist paintings. And they were making fun of them and saying that I could do this, anyone could do this, this isn't a woman, this is a pig. And it was galling to me that you could have this simplistic an outlook, because this wasn't about being an art historian or anything like that. It was the all but physical manifestation of people's insecurity coming out. And another thing you see it with, and I saw it with this today, was you probably do this too. I cringe when there's going to be some discussion about Citizen Kane on Facebook, even in like a Turner Classic Movies group.
Yes, yeah, because even I, it's funny you mentioned that. I was actually looking at a Turner Classic Movies page the other day because we've got Eddie Muller, who is their Noir Alley host, coming on later this week. And even within that, thinking that these are film buffs was an astonishing level of ignorance when it came to film.
You mentioned him, and he was at the, back when the Brattle was open, he would come and do like an introduction. He would curate a film noir mini festival each year. And so I am also a member of all these film noir groups. And what I've noticed is a lot of people are there, not because they have any interest in the kind of films at all. You see it with the Criterion Collection, too. Mm. People will be a member of a Criterion Collection group, and they will buy the films to collect the film, and they won't even open them sometimes. And they want the community. They want to be able to take a photo of their bookcase of 50 Criterion shrink-wrapped films. And they don't... This is what should be my next blind buy, guys. You see that term, right? That means that you're just going to buy something you know nothing about, and maybe you'll watch it, but you're going to own it. And the ownership is everything. And when I see the Citizen Kane Facebook discussions, it's all about, I don't see what the big deal is, that it's this overrated thing. And sure, the cinematography is good. It's like you're an expert on deep focus, right? Like, you can't even tell that the film's good, but you're going to speak to Greg Toland's command of, like, depth of field and masterful lighting and all of that. But anytime I see Citizen Kane discussed, it is always in, like, this overrated context. Whereas I would argue that you could put forward the case that it's, in fact, underrated.
Well, I want to go back to this notion of living life to the fullest, because I don't know what it means. But when it comes to friends, would you want a friend, or could you be the kind of friend who could say to me, for instance, Kimball, I've been watching for a while here, and I'm not sure you're living your life to the fullest. I'm not sure you're maxing out on your capacity. Would you be that kind of friend? Would you want a friend like that?
I would answer that by saying it's twofold for me. I've grown so much in living life to the fullest that I've gone beyond everyone I know. I don't have anyone. And part of this started happening in 2012 when my life, which was already quite bad, fell apart. And I literally became someone who, like, walked the earth and walked 3,000 miles a year writing masterpieces in my head. And that type of strength and drive and purpose and endurance and getting up and doing, I slept 10 hours last week. I mean, you know about that. Listeners don't know about that. Creating just works for all time every day, knowing that they have no chance while I'm in this situation that I'm trying to get out of. And as I've grown, I just have nothing in common with anyone, which is ironic because what I do is for everyone. And I think it illuminates more than anything does what it means to be human. But I have remained a good friend to the people who I know, and some of them who treat me quite poorly, because I think a lot of times what people do is they, even if they don't mean to, they compare where you're at with where they are at. And frankly, just a lot of people don't like getting up on a Saturday and saying this guy's walked 20 miles and written 3 stories and published 2 things and everything else. It has a way of eating away at people. And it's something I don't know how to solve yet, because I have no one who likes me, and I need to have millions who like me in order to reach the amount of people I want to reach. But sometimes people come to me when they have nothing else. They have no one else to turn to, and they need kind of like that buck stops here sort of advice. And I am able to give them that kind of advice that you just mentioned from time to time. But also part of that is because of what I can do with words. I mean, that is a lot of kind of the load-bearing walls. You know what I mean? It's not like, I was thinking, like, you know, your wife's been going to the gym and maybe you could head up the gym a little bit more and, I don't know, get a library card. Like, you know, like, it's not like that. It's more subtle, and it comes from a place of, I think, real humanness.
Well, when we talk about that phrase, and we make light of it because most of the people who use it, I'm not sure, know what it means, but what does it mean on a deeply human sense? Is it about getting the most out of whatever abilities you have as a person, or can happiness, can that level of fulfillment be living life to the fullest?
I think happiness comes from maxing out on what a person can be and being fully present. And the reason, sometimes you've asked me, like, how can you write these stories or whatever? And I've realized that, like, the reason, maybe more than anything, you have to have the ability and work at all of that, but I'm completely, fully present in the moment of creation. That is the entire world. And that was a point that was made in that Michael Jordan documentary, too. Someone finally said near the end of it, like, look, the better athlete than everyone. He's just better. But the thing that makes him transcendent, that gives him his imminence, is that he is always fully present in what he's doing. And I think happiness comes when we live as fully as we can, as openly as we can, as vulnerably as we can. And that takes a different kind of amalgamation. Sometimes it's maxing out on something you do. And maxing out on something you do can be being the best parent you can be. But I also think it comes down to this idea of, and it was expressed very pithily, Jefferson Airplane. Remember that whole lyric of feed your head? And it sounds like kind of a mixed metaphor, but there's just so much out there. And I have this person I've known for 25 years, and I was talking to them, and I'm so conscious of the difference between us over that quarter of a century. And it's not just because of the reality that's not my fault and not their fault that we have like different levels of minds. I'm also thinking that my views and everything in my life is informed by tens of thousands of works of art and things that this person has never exposed themselves to and never will. And their life will be the conversation with the wife, which is perfunctory, and the two children, which might provide like moments of illumination as kids do. But then the people at the job who are going to be the same people with the same thing and the same, did you see the game last night? And if you are that way, then I would say that it's easy to go along and feel like, okay, this is fine. This is good enough. I think that's a lot of people. But to me, anytime you say to yourself, this is good enough, you're not living life even fractionally to the fullest.
There you go. Colin Fleming with his son, Downtown. His latest book, Meatheads Say the Realest Things, a satirical short novel of the last bro. Check out his website as well at colinflemminglit.com. Subscribe to the Many Moments More blog and get a unique look at the life and the creative process of an artist. Colin, thanks as always, my friend. We'll do it next week.
Okay. Sounds good, sir.